Now let's turn to the other basic question. What can be done to make life more wonderful? This takes the form of a clear request. We need to now request of the other person what we would like them to do to make life more wonderful for us. We've told them the pain we feel in relationship to what their behavior is, what needs of ours aren't getting met. Now we're going to say what we would like them to do to make life more wonderful for us. So imagine that you've said the first things to the person. You've told them what they've done, how you feel, what needs of yours aren't getting met. Now write down what you would say to make a request. Put it this way. I would like you to, and then fill in the blank. What would you like this person to do to make life more wonderful for you? Now let's take a look at what you wrote down. Nonviolent communication suggests that we make our request using positive action language. So let me explain what I mean by each of those. Positive in the sense of what do you want the other person to do, in contrast to what you don't want or what you want them to stop doing. We get to a different place with people when we are clear about what we want, rather than just telling them what we don't want. A good example of that was a teacher recently in a workshop. She said, "Oh, Marshall, you've just helped me understand what happened to me yesterday." I said, "What was that?" She said, "There was this boy tapping on his book while I was talking to the class." And I said, "Would you please stop tapping on your book?" So he started to tap on his desk. You see, telling people what we don't want is far different than what we do want. When we try to get somebody to stop something, it makes punishment look like an effective strategy. But if we ask ourselves two questions, we would never use punishment again. We would never use it with children. We would create a judicial system, a correctional system that does not punish criminals for what they've done. And we wouldn't try to punish other nations for what they're doing to us. Punishment is a losing game. We would see that if we asked these two questions. Question number one, what do we want the other person to do? See, not what we don't want. What do we want them to do? Now, if we ask only that question, it can still make punishment seem like it works sometimes, because we can probably recall times when we've used punishment and we were successful at getting somebody to do what we wanted them to do. But if we add a second question, we'll see punishment never works. And what is the second question? What do we want the other person's reasons to be for doing what we want them to do? Now, as I said earlier, the purpose of nonviolent communication is to create connections so people do for one another out of compassion, not out of fear of punishment, not out of hope for rewards, but because of the natural joy we feel of contributing to one another's well-being. So when we make our request, we want to do them in the positive, what we do want. So in the example I gave you earlier with the mother and her daughter who said she wanted her daughter to clean up the room, and I said, well, that wasn't a need, nor was it a clear request. So I said to the mother, let's first get the needs clear, and then we'll see how to make that request clearer. So I said to the mother, what need of yours is not met when your daughter has the room in the state that it is? And the mother said, well, I think that if a family member is going to be a family member, they all have to contribute. I said, excuse me, hold it. Saying what you think is a distorted expression of a need. If you want your daughter to see the beauty in your request, she needs to see how life will be made more wonderful if she does what you're asking. So what is your need? What do you need that isn't being met? The mother said, I don't know. And I wasn't surprised because many women that I work with have been educated from childhood on to believe that loving women have no needs. They sacrifice their needs for their family. Men have been taught courageous men have no needs. They're willing to even sacrifice their life for the king, for the government, for whomever. So we don't develop much of a vocabulary of needs. So finally, with my help, the mother did get clear what her needs were, and she had more than one need that was involved. First of all, the mother had a need for order and beauty. Okay. She could have gotten that need met by herself, but mother also had a need for some support, some help in creating the kind of order and beauty she would like. So the mother then became conscious that two needs of hers were involved in this, her need for order, beauty, and need for support in getting her needs met. I said, okay, then, now let's get to your request. And let's express it in positive action language. Say to your daughter what you do want. She said, well, I told you I want her to clean up the room. No, you see, now we have to use action language. Clean is too vague. We have to use a concrete action to make our requests. So what the mother finally came up with was that she would like the daughter to make the bed, to put clothes that were ready for the wash in the wash, not leave them on the floor, take dishes back into the kitchen that she had brought into her room. That would be a clear request. Now, once we have made this clear request, we need to be clear that it is not a demand. Earlier, we talked about criticism, anything that implies wrongness as a kind of communication that's not going to get our needs met. A second form of communication that's very destructive in human relationships are demands. We want to make clear, assertive requests, but we want other people to know that these are requests and not demands. Now, what's the difference? First, you can't tell the difference by how nicely it is asked. So if we do say to someone living with us, I would like you to hang up your clothes when you're finished with them. Now, is that a request or a demand? We don't know yet. We don't know. You can never tell whether something is a request or a demand by how nicely it is asked or how clear it is. What determines the difference between a request and a demand is how we treat people when they don't respond to our request. That's what tells people whether we make requests or demands. Now, what happens when people hear demands? Well, it's pretty obvious with some people when they've heard your request as a demand. One time I asked my youngest son, would you please hang your coat up in the closet? And he said, who was your slave before I was born? Okay, well, that's easy to be around such a person. Then if they hear your request as a demand, you know it right away. But other people, when they hear a request as a demand, they respond quite differently. They'll say something like, okay, but they don't do it. Or the worst case is when the person hears the demand and they say, okay, and they do it. But they did it because they heard a demand. They were afraid of what would happen to them if they didn't. Anytime somebody does what we ask, out of guilt, shame, duty, obligation, fear of punishment, anything that people do for us out of that energy, we're going to pay for it. See, we want people to do for us only when they're connected to a kind of a divine energy that exists in all of us. And this divine energy is manifest to me by this joy we feel in giving to one another. We're not doing it to avoid punishment, guilt, and all of those things. Now, some people cannot believe that you can have order in the house and the government unless you do force people to do things, make demands. For example, one mother I was working with, she said, but Marshall, that's all very well and good, you see, to hope that people are going to respond out of divine energy. But what about a child? I mean, a child has to first learn what they have to do, what they should do. This mother was using two of the words or concepts that I think are the most destructive. Have to, should. So she didn't trust that there's divine energy in children as well as in adults so that they can do things not because they're going to be punished if they don't, but because they see the joy that comes from contributing to other people's well-being. So I said to the mother, I hope today I can show you other ways of presenting things to your children so that it's more a request. They see your needs. They don't do it because they think they have to. They see the choice and they respond out of this divine energy within themselves. She says, I do all kinds of things every day that I hate to do, but there just are some things you have to do. I said, could you give me an example? She said, okay, here's one. When I leave here this evening, I have to go home and cook. I hate to cook. I hate it with a passion. But it's just one of those things you have to do. I've done it every day for 20 years. I hate it, but you have to do certain things. See, she wasn't doing that out of divine energy. She was doing that out of this other kind of consciousness. So I said to her, well, I'm hoping I can show you today a way of thinking and communicating that will help you get back in touch with your divine energy and make sure that you only come out of that and that you can then present things to others so that they can come out of that energy. She was a rapid student. She went home that very night, announced to her family that she no longer wanted to cook. I got some feedback from her family. About 3 weeks later, who shows up at a training but her older two sons? They came up before the training and said to me, we want to tell you how much change in our family has occurred since our mother came to your workshop. Well, yeah, you know, I've been very curious. You know, she told me that all the changes she's been making in her life since I showed her how to come out of a certain energy whenever she does things and not to do things because she thought she had to. And I'm always wondering how that affects other family members. So I'm glad you guys showed up tonight. For example, what was it like that first night when she came home and said she no longer wanted to cook? The oldest son said to me, Marshall, I said to myself, thank God. I said, help me understand how you came to that. He said, I said to myself, now maybe she won't complain after every meal. So when we do things, it doesn't come out of this divine energy in each of us, this divine energy that makes compassionate giving natural. When we come out of this culturally learned patterns of doing things because we should, have to, must, to get rewards, out of guilt, out of shame, duty, obligation, everybody pays for it, everybody. So nonviolent communication wants us to be clear. Don't respond unless it's coming out of this divine energy, and you'll know it is when you are willing to do it. Even if it's hard work, it will be joyful if our only motive is to make life more wonderful. Now, here's what happens if people hear demands. See, while I was first learning nonviolent communication, first getting all of this clear to myself, I had already started being a parent, but with the old school thoughts. So I had to clean up a mess for a while, because even now when I was trying to be sure that when I made requests, they were requests, it was still easy for them to hear as a demand, as I told you, my youngest son saying, who was your slave? So now that same son, twice a week, in the days before I was using nonviolent communication, we had the garbage war at our house. Now, what was the garbage war? You see, this was a task I had given him. I said, I want you to take the job over of taking out the garbage. Now, this was a demand, you see, because in my head I had the thought that children should do tasks. So I wasn't telling him what need of mine would be met. I was telling him what he had to do. Putting it very nicely, this is your job. I would like you to take out the garbage. But because he was hearing it as a demand, we had the garbage war twice a week. And how did the garbage war start? Simply by my mentioning his name. Brett! Now, how does he accelerate the war? He's in the next room. He pretends like he didn't hear me. So now I further the war even more. I scream now so loudly he can't pretend he didn't hear me. What do you want? The garbage isn't out. You're very perceptive, Dad. Get it out. I'll do it later. You said that last time and didn't. Doesn't mean I won't do it this time. Can you imagine so much energy going into just getting the garbage out twice a week? all because I was making a demand without realizing it. I didn't know the difference between a request and a demand at that time. So now, as I was starting to learn nonviolent communication, I sat with him one night and listened to why the garbage wasn't going up. And he made it so clear that it was because he was hearing a demand. So I sat down afterwards and wrote this song. If I clearly understand, you intend no demand, I'll usually respond when you call. But if you come across like a high and mighty boss, you'll feel like you ran into a wall. And when you remind me so piously about all of those things you've done for me, you'd better get ready. Here comes another bout. Then you can shout, you can spit, moan and groan, throw a fit. I still won't take the garbage out. Now even if you should change your style, it's going to take me a little while before I can forgive and forget. Because it seemed to me that you didn't see me as human too, until all your standards were met. It certainly helped me to get clear the difference between request and demands. For example, this was the same child that when it snowed, he would run down to the street corner where a woman with a severe handicap couldn't walk, but she could drive her car. But when her driveway was filled with snow, she had no mobility. So he would go down there and shovel her walk. It would take him well over an hour to clear her driveway. He never told her who did it, never asked for money. Now at our house, we had a tiny little walkway to shovel. I couldn't get it done, and I was wondering, how come he'll do all of this for the neighbor? Well, because for the neighbor, it could come out of this divine energy that makes joyful this giving to others. But I was putting it to him in a domination style. I'm the father, and I know what you have to do. So now we've looked at how we express what's alive in us and what would make life more wonderful. We see how it requires observations, feelings, needs, clear requests. But those are the mechanics. It's always important to realize that these mechanics only have power when they're in the service of the spiritual purpose of the process, which is to create a connection so that people can respond out of divine energy, the joy of compassion, the joy of giving. If we do not have that intentionality, we've missed the whole thing. For example, one mother came back a second day of a workshop, and she said, I went home and tried it last night, Marshall, and it didn't work. I said, well, let's learn from the experience. What did you do? And she told me how she expressed herself to one of her children who hadn't done something she wanted. And she used the mechanics perfectly. She made a very clear observation, expressed her feelings, needs, requests. But she said he didn't do it. And I said, so what do you mean it didn't work? Well, she said he didn't do it. Oh, so you're defining works, that somebody does what you want them to do. Yes. Oh, well, then you see that it's not nonviolent communication. Even if you use the mechanics, that's not the idea. Remember yesterday I said the purpose is to create a quality of connection that allows us to give to one another out of the joy of compassionate giving. It's not just to get what you want. Oh, she said, so I'm just supposed to do all the work around the house myself. See, she makes the mistake that many people do, to think that if we don't get people to do what we want, the only other option is to give up and then be permissive, to have anarchy. And I showed her that if we connect in the way I'm talking about, everybody's needs can get met. But if the other person thinks we have single-mindedness of purpose to get our request adhered to, it changes the game. Then it makes our request into demands. So we've seen now how to be honest in nonviolent communication, sharing those four things from this consciousness of creating that special connection that enables compassionate giving to take place.